All rise, the Court of Appeals Division One is now in session.
Thank you all, please be seated. Good afternoon, this is the time set for oral argument in our case number CV250891, Pavlak versus Funk Family Enterprises LLC. Each side is allocated 20 minutes for oral argument. I'd encourage you to keep that in mind as you present argument. Appellant is may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal. If you wish to do so, sir, you need to keep track of your own time at the podium clock. Out of respect for counsel and to avoid any embarrassment, I would ask everyone in attendance to make sure your cell phones are off so our proceedings are not being interrupted. We've read the briefs. We've conferenced the case. We would encourage you to keep that in mind as you present oral argument today. Proceedings are being recorded and will be posted to YouTube in due course, so please, as you begin your presentation, tell us your name and the party that you represent. With that, Mr. Combs, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chris Combs, represent John and Tina Pavlak. And just, I'm going to make some prefatory comments and then kind of get to the substance. In the first sentence of the introductory section of Funk's appeal brief, Funk alleges that the modified building envelope on lot 10 was approved by the City of Mesa and the HOA. Understandably, at that early stage of litigation, Funk may have been confused, but without question, the Pavlak subsequently sued both the HOA and the City of Mesa. And we settled relatively quickly with the City of Mesa because the Pavlaks live in a nice home in a nice neighborhood, but they're not Elon Musk, and we were battling already a HOA of 1,200 homes and a speculative home builder who made a $320,000 cash purchase of lot 10. So we settled relatively quickly with the City of Mesa and then continued on with
Mr. Combs, can I ask you a question about that? You settled with the City of Mesa. Was the settlement such that the approval that the city had given stood? Was that the terms of the settlement?
Well, quite honestly, after we settled, we didn't care. I mean, there's an argument.
Did you obtain any relief from the city as part of that settlement? Did they change any decision? Did you get anything from them?
Cash settlement, Your Honor.
Cash settlement. Okay. So the approval by the City of Mesa, to the extent that it was approved, that was not changed by the settlement that you entered into. Is that correct?
Well, that's another reason we settled. It's pretty confusing what goes on in the city. Apparently, Mr. Funk did not fill out the proper form, and the improper form was approved, but he could fill out the correct form, and then it would probably be approved again. We just saw no happy ending in sight.
Okay.
Any other questions? Sorry.
Please proceed.
The question was, from the beginning with the Homeowners Association, the Red Mountain Homeowners Association is roughly 1,200 homes in East Mesa. This particular area was 13 lots, 10 of which were built. Lot 10, one of the 13 lots, had never been built, although there was a building permit issued 10 years earlier to the original owner of of lot 10, and there had never been an approval by the HOA to move a building envelope on any of the 13 lots before.
Okay.
the HOA and nor the city nor Funk has ever opposed our damages claim. We have a $300,000 diminution in value from a local real estate value because the home sits down and looks right down on the Pavlex pool area, backyard area, and in the preceding 3 years, the Pavlex had spent almost $300,000. This was their retirement home. They were going to stay in this home until they went to a nursing home or passed away. And so they put $287,000 to expand with a putting green, blah, blah, blah.
Mr. Combs, let me ask you, I want to make sure we're talking about the same issues that I think are in front of this court. You don't challenge the denial of the preliminary injunction request, the dismissal of the claims in the original complaint, or the dismissal of the claims in the first amended complaint, other than the nuisance claim, the common law nuisance claim. That's what's before us, right?
Yes, Your Honor. We, over a period of time, and we were given leave to amend, we had five claims.
I understand. And only one of those.
Yeah, the other four were dismissed. We did nothing.
Okay.
The only claim we were appealing is the nuisance claim.
And that was dismissed for failure to state a claim under 12b-5, right? So we're early days in the case.
Well, we had a preliminary injunction hearing.
I understand, but you didn't appeal from that, and that's not before us.
I totally agree.
Okay. So I guess I want to make sure we're on the same page on what's here. I see this appeal involving the challenge of a grant of a motion to dismiss under 12b-6 for the common law nuisance claim in the first amended complaint. That's it.
Correct.
Okay. I'd encourage you to address your comments so we use our time best as to that claim.
Well, quite honestly, and paraphrasing Vince Lombardi, the O'Neill versus Atwell decision isn't the winning argument, it's the only argument. And should be a winning argument. I mean, there's a lot of issues, a lot of briefing. We had a preliminary injunction hearing that lasted 3 hours.
And I understand that. I guess what I'm trying to figure out is how that's relevant to whether the trial court properly granted the 12b-6 on the nuisance claim. I want to make sure we now have 13 more minutes, you and I, and I want to make sure I understand your position as well as I can.
Well, a Neal decision, like I said, that's really the controlling case. It's the only decision in the 50 states dealing with this type of neighbor issue. And it dealt not with a motion to dismiss, but the actual reversal of a judgment.
And that's from Ohio, right?
Pardon me?
That's from another state, right? That's the Ohio decision?
That's the Ohio decision.
And so that's not binding on us, but you're asking us to apply that analysis.
Yeah, and I'm sure the court has read the decision. It's a well-reasoned decision with a nasty neighbor who went ahead even though he didn't have approval. And the O'Neills were left with no alternative but go to court. The trial judge ruled against the O'Neills. And then the O'Neills appealed to the Court of Appeals. And the Court of Appeals quite convincingly and unanimously agreed with the O'Neills.
You said they went ahead without approval. In this case, they obtained approval first. Does that make this case different? If the city and the homeowners association approved the change to the building envelope, does that make the case different from the Ohio case?
Well, moving the building envelope created the nuisance. Right now, there are bulldozers out on the new modified
but
building
envelope.
I'm
just asking the case that you're relying on. It. You're saying that's one where something was built without approvals?
Yes, it was. And the O'Neills went to the trial court, and the trial court denied the O'Neills' claim. And so then the O'Neills went to the Court of Appeals in Ohio. Like I said, the O'Neill case is why we're here today. There's no other case in the 49 other states dealing with this issue.
But would that case have come out the same way if the defendants had sought approval ahead of time to do what they were doing, to get a zoning change or some kind of variance from a homeowners association? And I don't recall. We can look at it if you don't recall off the top of your
head. Well, the neighbor was not the greatest person. And what the procedure was, he would get approval, would get denied approval, and they go ahead and do whatever he wanted to do. And that's why in the proceedings, the O'Neills wanted an injunction, or otherwise they wanted compensation for the DIV diminution in value.
You're suggesting the nuisance is that someone can see into the backyard? Is that your primary argument regarding nuisance?
Yes, Sean, and it's easy to say you have to be there to see the extent of the nuisance, and it wouldn't have been so. But there's $300,000 diminution in value. These are high-end homes, and that's argumentative. And maybe they haven't yet. But maybe the opposing counsel will get an expert to say, oh, there's no damage by what's happened. But if you were there, you would see this is a $2 million home, that if you had a chance to buy another $2 million home without this problem, home, you would want a significant discount.
Is the problem just another house next door or the exact location of this other house?
You mean the Funk House?
Yes.
On Lot 10?
Yes.
Well, it's the property line in some places is only 15 feet. It's straight up a hill. If you go back to World War II movies, it's like Audie Murphy's up there with a machine. The Germans are up there with a machine gun looking right down, and Audie Murphy charges up the hill.
But doesn't that sort of go against your argument if anyone who builds or who has a house up there on that lot is going to be able to see into your clients?
Absolutely not.
No?
This is a community. Everybody else is basically around the common street. Lot 10 had a building envelope approved 10 years ago by submitted by the Bliss family, and they also had building plans. They opted to buy another house in another area of Red Mountain. And so they had for 10 years. It wasn't like people were knocking on the door to buy this lot. And for another 10 years, Bliss could not sell the lot, even though the plans were included. And
but
are
they entitled to rely on the fact that there was a building envelope established that was further back? Are they entitled to rely on that in developing their own backyard? I mean, is that something that's fixed in stone that they're entitled to rely on when they go spend this $287,000 on backyard improvements? Are they entitled to assume that building envelope is set in stone and will never move?
Well, they're certainly not, but they're entitled. But neither the city of Mesa nor the HOA went around talking to the neighbors. I mean, and neither the city of Mesa or the HOA even went to the site to see if there would be any damage. The wheels were greased. Mr. Funk paid $320,000 cash for a lot. He would not have done that unless he knew he would be able to move from down by the street up on top of the ridge, looking down at everybody else and looking right at Red Mountain. We had the preliminary injunction hearing. We had like four or five neighbors of the Pavleks testify. One lady said her house was worth over $3 million and that she had a DIV of $500,000. It's affected the whole neighborhood.
Could I ask, though, is someone could go up on the high part of the lot, is that correct? Even if the house isn't built on the highest part, someone could go up there and look into the neighboring yards?
Someone can go on Lot 10?
Lot 10, even if the building envelope had not changed. It's still part of Lot 10, and people are entitled to...
Oh, yeah, if they wanted to go up and have a picnic...
They would be able to see into your client's yard if they were to do that, even with the initial building envelope?
Well, I don't think that was anticipated by the Pavlex, and it's easy for me to say you have to be there to understand, but it's rocky, mountainous kind of, you're not going to, even on the Funk lot 10, you're not going to go up there and throw down a blanket and have a picnic. It's not that kind of terrain.
So, Mr. Combs, to show common law nuisance, you've got to show that the interference is substantial, intentional, and unreasonable. Would you help me with what in your complaint establishes that the interference was substantial, intentional, and unreasonable?
Well, again, we're at the motion to dismiss stage.
I agree. And if I'm assuming that we take your complaint as true, I'm asking you which parts of that establish that it is substantial, intentional, and unreasonable.
Well, a loss of $587,500 potentially, that's pretty substantial by itself.
Okay, what about intentional?
Intentional?
Mm-hmm.
Before you get there, could I ask on the loss on that number, is that because they've lost their view, or is it because they have someone looking into their yard, or is that both?
Well, it's more both. I mean, the realtor, Mr. Maldonado, farms that area, and he came up that if you wanted to sell the property today, instead of the $2 million, you would only be able to sell it for $1.7 million, and that was a diminution value of $300,000.
But is that if they had built under the original, or is it their views would not have been blocked? You're just saying, just because there's a new home there, or because it's being put right where it is?
Oh, totally. The Bliss family already 10 years earlier had approval to build a home on the building envelope for lot 10. And nobody else, the other 13 lots, no one else has ever been able to move the building envelope. It's always been turned down by the HOA. For some reason, without any contact of any of the neighbors, even going to the property, the HOA approved this, what can only be called a travesty for the neighborhood. Five neighbors, and this was our hearing was in late July, and trying to get five people on vacation, I think we only ended up with three or four. But it was a monumental effort, and we accomplished what we wanted. The other neighbors are agitated, but they're kind of letting the Pavlek family proceed.
But you're saying the loss in value, does that now have to do with they've lost a view of the mountains that they had before, or is it just that now they have somebody looking in their backyard?
Well, Judge, if you and your family were looking for a home, and if the exact same home was on the other side, on the street, like all the other homes, and barely could see your backyard, you'd pay $300,000 less, or offer $300,000 less. Because your realtor would probably say, when you want to sell it, you're going to take a beating.
Sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead.
Oh, again, so substantial, intentional, and unreasonable. Is it? It's the moving of the building envelope is your allegation that is the nuisance, correct?
Well, that's the essence of our case, and that's the essence of O'Neill.
Okay. So, and it generally requires that it be intentional. Are you arguing essentially that it was that the fact that he went and applied to have the building envelope moved establishes that it was an intentional interference?
It was intentional because he never had the approval of the HOA, which is required, and he never had the approval of the city of Mesa.
But he went and got it, didn't he?
Pardon me?
He went and got those approvals. You challenged them afterwards, but he went and got those approvals, didn't he?
No. From the city of Mesa?
There was never any approval of the change in the building envelope?
Well, we settled with the city of Mesa. They would not have paid us money if they didn't think they had some liability.
But that's suggesting that they did, in fact, approve the change to the building envelope. Did the city of Mesa and the Homeowners Association approve the change to the building envelope?
Well, let's take the easy one first. HOA has never approved it. We've tried to depose the board of directors. There's a pending motion for
Okay, but did they have to have homeowners' approval to do what they did?
Well, there's a pending motion for protective order, and all the depositions we noticed for June and July are on hold right now, and the HOA's council is here, obviously, to see how this shakes up with you gentlemen. And the only people that lose are the Pavliks who did nothing wrong. Nobody's ever said they didn't come to the danger or anything. They didn't think there was a danger. The same piece of dirt had existed since the 10 years they'd been there. Not one building envelope change had ever been approved by the HOA. They had no idea they'd get stabbed in the back. There's members of the association. They're obviously citizens of the town of Mesa. The town of Mesa, without question, and the HOA let the Pavliks down. And that's why we're here.
Thank you, Mr. Combs. Your time has expired. We will give you 2 minutes for rebuttal if you wish to. Mr. Cobb will give you 2 in addition for response argument.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Cobb, you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, I'm Richard Cobb, and of course I represent the Funk Family Enterprises. And I will get straight to the heart of the issue. If you look at page 4 of the opening brief, the Pavliks give you 5 reasons why Judge Thuma's motion to dismiss should be overturned. All 5 of them are wrong, and I'm going to walk through them real quick and just explain to you why after I read paragraph 17 from the first amended complaint filed by Mr. Combs. It says, and I quote, Funk committed fraud within the meaning of the ACFA, that's the Arizona Consumer Fraud Act, to obtain approval of the modification by both the City of Mesa and the Red Mountain Ranch HOA. I don't think it's in dispute in this case that we got for approval from the association and the City of Mesa. That's not in dispute, if there's any confusion about that.
And, Counselor, do you agree that we're here for an important but narrow one count?
One count issue only.
Okay.
All right. They give you 5 reasons why that one dismissal of that one count should be reversed. The first, and I'll just list them and then I'll explain briefly. The first is they at least alleged an interference. They at least said it. The second is they at least alleged a diminution. The third is that they alleged the loss of their right to privacy, backyard privacy. The fourth is they lost their view that they would have had the house not been built there. And the fifth is there's a potential that there may be a runoff issue later. As to the first issue, as I'm sure this court is only too aware, you know, you can look at the law de novo, right? But you have to look at the well-pled facts. And the facts are that they don't give you any nuisance other than that the building envelope was changed. There's not a noxious smell. There's not a glare from a gigantic, you know, sun power plant panel. You know, there's not noise from a party. There's none of the traditional indicia of nuisance. Cullen versus auto owner said that it's not, Rule 8 does not permit the trial or the appellate court to speculate about hypothetical facts. You got to take the facts as they pled them, and they just don't plead anything else. There is no doubt this is not new ground for the three of you, and so I won't plow into it any deeper except to say that they have to be able to prove that one of their 4 remaining points is a valid point or the ruling by Judge Warner stands. Their second point is that they have a diminution in value. You've heard them say it, and you have to assume it's true. But the problem is, that's not enough. The law is very clear that a diminution without an interference just doesn't count. We give you the case of Oliver versus AT&T. AT&T builds a 130-foot tall cell tower next to the Oliver property. Oliver comes in and says, this thing looms over my house. I don't like it. But Oliver doesn't allege that they can't use their house. And the court says, and I quote, the only allegation in support of plaintiff's nuisance claim is that the new tower's appearance interferes with their enjoyment of the property. They claim it is tall and looms over the property, yet they admit that the tower cannot be seen from anywhere else inside the house. That has not disrupted their use of the property. And the court goes on to say, a diminution in value does not interfere with the present use of property and cannot alone constitute a nuisance. So again, one of the three now remaining allegations of error has to be proven correct or Judge Warner's ruling must stand. We also gave you the Cole Irvine case. In Cole Irvine, the airlines that fly in and out of John Wayne Airport, it's kind of a fun case, created a fuel farm next to John Wayne Airport and next to a business park, and they had three 300,000-gallon jet fuel tanks above ground. And the business park said, hey, our property's not worth as much as it used to be because you put a bomb next to us, right? Our employees won't park in the parking lot next to the fuel farm, and we've got a huge DIV, and the court said yes, but did they interfere with your use of the parking lot? And the answer is no. You can still use the parking lot.
Is it your position that if, for whatever reason, they're able to establish that they are unable to use their backyard or unwilling to use their backyard because there is a house looming over their backyard, that is insufficient as a matter of law to establish?
As a matter of law.
Based on what?
Oliver versus AT&T, Arizona case, and you've got Cole Irvine in California, both of which say a diminution in value alone is not enough.
That's different, though. My view has been obstructed. I don't like looking at a big tower. Is that different than having somebody stare directly into your backyard?
If you like the difference, may I then point you to Cole Irvine, because in Cole Irvine, what the court found was it's true. Your employees don't like using the parking lot, because they're afraid that they're going to park next to a bomb, right? Any more than the Pavlaks like using the backyard with somebody looking down into the backyard. But the fact that you don't like it doesn't mean that you can't use it.
I mean, is it your position that any private nuisance must be sufficient such that you cannot use the property at all,
has to be an interference with the use of law? And your subjective statement, I don't like a cell tower, it interferes with how I feel about being in my house. I don't like a fuel farm. I don't like how it feels when I park my car. Doesn't interfere with your ability to park the car next to the fuel tank and the fuel farm, and it doesn't interfere with your ability to use your house. There is no reported appellate level decision where some court has said, if you just don't like it, that's enough. If you look at the Graber case, you know, where the sewer backs up because the city has two small sewer lines, you know, you've got an act of interference. What you've got here is somebody who says, I just don't like the fact that you're next to me.
But if you build a deck and just have chairs all looking right down into the neighbor's backyard, are you saying that's not... It's just per se not a nuisance.
So let's talk about O'Neill. In O'Neill, on page 2, the court held that the units were designed to allow the owners to enjoy as much privacy as possible in their outdoor spaces. You see, there was a pleading that said they had a right to privacy. There's no allegation in the complaint that our CC&Rs give you a right to privacy from somebody looking down into your backyard. And in fact, if you think it through, it would be bad public policy to come up with one, because it would mean that you couldn't build a two-story house next to a one-story. You know, the land cost is too high in Arizona. You got to be able to build one-story, two-story houses. There's no expectation in the law anywhere that you won't have someone look down on your backyard. There is no right of private backyard privacy.
But there is no set of facts where a jury could reasonably conclude that that's an unreasonable interference.
Oh, and I'm so glad you asked the question that way, Your Honor. Because if you give the jury the case, they can find anything. But what the problem with that is this. There's not a reported appellate-level decision that we can find anywhere where somebody says, I just don't like being near a cell pole tower, or I don't like being near a fuel tank, and that's enough. You have to have an interference. And I not liking it is not an interference. You can use the parking lot. You can use the house next to the cell pole, and it's a lovely backyard. You can use the pool. It's still beautiful. The fact that you don't like it is just a problem. And in fact, if you look at the Armory court case, remember the food kitchen where they had the proper zoning, but the patrons at the food kitchen were littering and worse? You know, the court said, and they quoted Prosser for the proposition. I'm not going to say it as well as Prosser does, so I'll, if you'll indulge me just a second, I'll read it how they said it. The law does not concern itself with trifles or seek to remedy all the petty annoyances and disturbances of everyday life in a civilized community. You see, that's what you've got. In a civilized community, you have to have a next-door neighbor, and they have the right to build a two-story house. And if the CCNRs and if the city of Mesa's zoning requirements allow a two-story house, or in this case allow you to build a little bit further up the hill so that somebody looks in your backyard, well, you're just like about 50% of Arizona cities in the sense that somebody can look in your backyard, and you may not like it, but they haven't pled what you have to plead. You see, if you look at the obstruction of view cases that we gave you out of California, they have CCNRs over there in San Francisco. That's the epicenter of all obstruction of view cases, by the way, because the hills and the San Francisco Bay create a lot of litigation. They have a tree ordinance. It says you can't grow a tree that interferes with your neighbors looking down at the bay, right? And they've got ordinances that say you can't put an air conditioning unit on your roof that looks down. And the CCNRs over there all say that kind of thing. But in Arizona, we don't, because it's flat ground here. Unless you live on Camelback Mountain, you know, it's flat ground. We don't have that here. And so as a matter of public policy, finding that a jury's subjective sense that I wouldn't want to live near a cell pole is inconsistent with Oliver versus AT&T, I don't know how you could square that away.
What's your response to their reliance on O'Neill versus Apple?
Thank you for asking. First of all, page 2 of the O'Neill decision, the court said the units were designed to allow owners to enjoy as much outdoor privacy as possible. You don't have an allegation of privacy right here. There is no allegation. And in the O'Neill case, there was a set of CCNRs that limited the construction, construction of the deck on a common area. It wasn't allowed. Your little Romeo deck that you took and you expanded, you weren't allowed to do that because the airspace.
Yeah, but your client wasn't originally allowed to build the house where he built it. He had to get permission. He had to get an exception to the rule, didn't he?
He most certainly did. He got an exception, and they got one in the other case as well. And in the other case, the court said, look, there's CCNRs that the association should have enforced that said you had a right of privacy and you couldn't build out in a limited common element. You don't have that allegation in that First Amendment complaint. You can read it till the day is long, and it is not in there. There's no right of privacy in the backyard that's alleged anywhere. You can't find one in the common law. It's not in the CCNRs for this particular neighborhood. They certainly haven't put it in the complaint. It just doesn't exist.
And you're saying that was the basis of the decision in O'Neill.
O'Neill, page 5. Appellants argue that Atwell altered the percentage of interest of the remainder of the units of the owners in the common area and the limited common areas through the construction of his deck. And in O'Neill, it's a condo case. Of course you have all kind of CCNRs that talk about privacy and things you can and cannot do. These are just lots that are laying out there on the raw ground. This case is very different than O'Neill. And as a side note, we gave you the case of Cotterman versus Killian. This is the school tax credit case where the Arizona Supreme Court said that our establishment clause doesn't preclude you from taking your state tax credit and donating it to a church school. State of Washington had the exact same establishment clause. 30 states have it. And it's either the same or it's within a few words of being the same. And the state of Washington has 3 reported level decisions that say you can't use your tax credit money for a church school, right? And Arizona came out and said the exact opposite. And we said, oh, yes, you can. And in explaining why that's so, the Arizona...
But Oliver is a California case, isn't it? We don't have to follow it, do we?
You most certainly do not. Oh, I'm sorry, Oliver is an AT&T is an Arizona case. You do have to follow it.
Oliver versus AT&T?
I'm pretty
sure.
Do you
have the site? Looking at Oliver versus AT&T Wireless as a... California case.
I'm sorry, you were so correct. Oliver is a California case.
So while the facts may be on all fours,
you're
with your case,
not required any more than you have to follow Washington State. You are free to rule as you please.
Or Ohio, for that matter.
Or Ohio, for that matter. But the point is this. If you look at it as a matter of public policy, if there's nothing in the CCNRs that talks about privacy, right, that has been violated, there's nothing alleged in this case, how are you going to find that just the I don't like it factor is enough to make it a nuisance? You see, anything's a nuisance. And the courts are, it's clear the law is broad because nuisance is supposed to apply to facts that we can't even imagine, the silly things people do to their neighbors. But you've got to have a right that's being imposed upon. And in the Armory case.
But is there a right? Let me just give you a hypothetical. If the nuisance is somebody's making a noise, do the CCNRs have to have something that say, you can't make a noise? Can't somebody bring a nuisance case saying they're making too much noise?
I believe they can. I believe that noise.
But so why isn't this different?
Noxious odors and sound, glare, you know, those are all ripe for the picking. But here the point is, I just don't like the fact that your house is next to me is too broad. It's
well,
a hill too
far.
It's
not just that it's not next to me, it's that you're staring right down into my backyard.
That's right. You're staring right down into my backyard. And to that end, you have Judge Warner, who gets to the right place for the right reasons when he says, I'll quote him, "To hold otherwise would allow courts in nuisance cases to override the bargain for rules of planned development communities." This is public policy we're talking about now. If you just let that go and let a jury decide anything, there's a point at which CCNRs will break down. You can't have them held if a jury gets to decide, oh, no, the association shouldn't have enforced its own rules. We think it's a nuisance. Judge Warner goes on to say, because the HOA has a process for modifying building envelopes, a homeowner has no reasonable expectation that a neighbor's building envelope is unchangeable. Rather, they buy their home with notice that the existing building envelopes can be changed. He's right about that. And so the real, if I may, the real question that lies before this court is whether or not I don't like the fact that you built uphill from me. I don't like the fact that I lost my view. I don't like the fact that you can look down in my backyard as a jury question. And we respectfully submit that they haven't pled the active nuisance, right? They haven't pled the sewer backup. You know what I mean? What they've got is, I don't like the fact that you're next to me. Well, the problem is you can find a jury that'll say that about any house you ever want to build if you get lucky. You can always have that moment, and it's runaway. There's got to be some order in the law. And that's why CCNRs, that's why city zoning ordinances, that's why things like building envelopes have rules. And that's why Judge Warner was unwilling to allow the case to go to a jury and
well,
let a jury just ignore the rules.
Well, we're not quite there yet, though, are we?
How so?
Well, let's say that the 12B6 motion was denied, and you went forward and you did some discovery. You know what your next move is going to be. It's going to be a motion for summary judgment that no reasonable jury can conclude based on the evidence presented that this was a nuisance. Why should we not allow this to go back to the trial court to allow the facts to be developed and to allow you to make your inevitable motion for summary judgment that these particular facts are not sufficient as a matter of law to constitute a private nuisance?
Because of the holding of Cullen versus Auto Owners on page 5, note 10. That case says Rule 8 does not permit a trial court or appellate court to speculate about hypothetical facts. They got the facts they pled. They pled them twice. You know, they amended the complaint, they got it dismissed, and they had an evidentiary hearing. It's not like the judge took the case cold off paper. He had an evidentiary hearing.
Well, but the judge, at least Judge Warner, is not properly considering the evidence that he received at the preliminary injunction hearing to decide the 12B6.
No, and that wasn't my point. Okay. My point is simply this. They're stuck with what they pled. They've pled it twice now. You know, they had a chance to amend it, and they still haven't come up, and they still haven't given you a factual basis that would support the argument, much less a legal basis that any of us can find for loss of obstruction of view and for the fact that somebody can look in your backyard, that the house is in one spot as opposed to another spot. There's just no good public policy reason why Judge Warner's wrong when he says, look, the bargain for exchange when you move into a neighborhood is there's a process. And if they complied with that process, and if there's not an active interference with your property, that doesn't go to a jury. Any additional questions for me, Your Honor?
Just one. Was leave to amend granted or sought on the amended complaint?
Sought on the amended complaint.
Okay.
Didn't ask. It wasn't like it was denied. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Combs, rebuttal.
I don't think we have any rebuttal, Your Honor. I thought somebody said we didn't have any more rebuttal.
Very well. I afford you to do 2 additional minutes if you wish them.
I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you.
The Supreme Court did that 6 months ago. I almost lost the case.
Well, it's a different day, a different case, different court. Counsel, thank you for your briefs. Thank you for your argument today. We appreciate it. We will take the matter under advisement. We'll issue a written ruling in due course, and the court stands in recess.